This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome to the Chelsea Fancast Friday night preview show. Yes, indeed, it is 7 p.m. on a Friday, which means that me, Stamford Chidge, is sitting in front of a computer screen staring lovingly at Mr. Jonathan Kidd, who I haven't seen for at least 4 days.
Jeez, I never knew you cared.
I know. I do, really. I'm all heart. It's all untrue, these filthy rumours that I'm a heartless bastard, but... I do care deeply. How are you? You all right?
Good, thank you. Yep. All good.
All good. Lovely jubbly. Now, as ever, we have a third member of the ever-increasing Chelsea Fancast mob with us. And I'm delighted to say one of my favourite Friday night guests, largely because he always encourages me to have a beer whilst doing the show, just to keep him company, the wonderful Mr. Wickham.
You pulled the beer before me. What are you talking about?
Well, I was just in anticipation, Martin.
Of course, you know.
I'm just like all good Boy Scouts. Be prepared, you know. So there you go. We've got lovely Martin with us. And as always, of course, for part one of the Friday night preview show, we've got a lovely journalist with us. And of course, tonight we've got one of our new friends who's become very, very popular on the show, Mr. Sam Inkersoll from Football.London.
Well, you're far too kind as always, Chidge. Thanks for having me on as always, though. Much appreciated. Good evening to you all.
Well, lovely to see you, Sam, as it always is. And we're going to kick off, as you know, part one, all about Chelsea news from the week. Obviously, the big news of the week is how utterly wonderful we were against Atletico Madrid, which, I mean, I have to be honest, as I said on Monday, I think, I had a sneaking suspicion we might...
No, you didn't.
I certainly said it in a tweet to Mr. X before, and I can prove it to you. Not that I have to, but I had a feeling we might get something out of it, actually. I really did. Because Tommy Tactics, as we should now call him, did a good number, I thought, but a massive result. But really, you know, we won it through a piece of sheer brilliance by the ever wonderful, the bearded genius that is Olly Giroud, Sam.
Yeah, it was one of those games where it kind of looked like it was meandering into nothing. Nothing was going to happen, and it was always going to take a moment of genius or a mistake from someone to make the difference. And Giroud popped up with that wonder goal. I mean, but we've seen him do the spectacular before, so maybe it wasn't as surprising as we initially thought. But yeah. Tuchel got it spot on with his tactics. I think he was helped by the fact that Atletico were fantastically cautious with their 6-3-1 formation, essentially, that they were playing.
And that was fantastically diplomatic.
Exactly. I'm trying to be kind, but yeah, they were really Well, Atletico were poor. There's no other way to say it. They were poor. There was not what we was expecting from them. But Chelsea did a number on them. They kept João Felix quiet, kept Luis Suarez quiet, didn't rise to Suarez's histrionics, shall we say. And yeah, he got it absolutely spot on, did Tuchel, keeping Hudson-Odoi in the starting 11 as well for the game, which was a big call as well. But that panned out and everything just went as he probably hoped it would. And yeah, it was by far and away the best performance, I think, that they've had under his stewardship so far. I know it's only 8 games, but he got it absolutely spot on from minute one. And they deserved to win. It was one of the most comfortable 1-0 wins you will ever see, I think.
I mean, the interesting thing, Sam, it could have been and perhaps should have been a lot more, JK. Your chum Werner didn't really cover himself in glory, but I don't want to be too churlish about it because the reality is it was a great result.
At least he had a few shots. You know, we're seeing some evolution from him, and he's. I mean, I don't know whether it was because they were so poor at shutting him down, but if he fits into this role, because he's a very swift player indeed, if he can fit into this tactical setup. I mean, we've had to really reappraise after that because that was genius, completely genius way of playing. And I think he was trying to do that at the weekend to an extent with Southampton. And that's why Odoi so pissed him off because he wasn't doing what he asked him to do. But I thought that several players were fit into this role absolutely perfectly. Well, it's supposed to be the counter-pressing, isn't it? The number of times they push the team, they push the opposition basically out to kick the ball out or give away throws. They're just not given any opportunity other than a long ball. And other than the first few minutes that we have where there was a bit of trepidation with Mount's foul, which is going to make the second leg interesting because he won't be involved. And Mendy's heavy touch. There was never any possibility of it. Well, we didn't never looked as if we would concede, except being Chelsea. Of course, I'm still sitting on the edge of my seat waiting for
you,
somebody.
You still are even now. The match has been over
now
3
I am.
Days.
I know. I'm on the edge of my seat, boys. But I felt that to reappraise it, he was actually suddenly a vote of great confidence for the man for Tuchel, because I actually thought I get what he's trying to do now. And it was quite joyous. It was quite a joyous experience watching that, I have to say.
Well, I don't know if I'd go that far. I think it was a bit too tense for that. I have to say, Martin, what surprised me, we could argue this till the cows come home about the relative merits of La Liga versus the Premier League and whether the Premier League is a lot stronger than La Liga, but I expected a lot more from Atletico Madrid. And I mean, for them to be... I mean, OK, I know that they defended with 6 to try and counteract our threat, which, of course, is through the wing-backs. But I really didn't expect them to have so little ambition. And they were at home, for God's sake. I was really surprised by that.
Well, technically, they weren't at home, were they?
Well, you know what I mean.
It was, you know, it will say home tie, but it wasn't a home game. They were playing in Bucharest, not Madrid. But you are right, and I do agree with you. I expected a lot more from them. I thought João Felix was reasonably quiet. The only noise we heard from Suarez was when he tried to pinch Rudiger's thigh.
There's naughty.
A little bit of shithousery.
Dennis Wise, eat your heart out.
I don't think Dennis Wise pinched his thigh.
Well, no, didn't he pinch Nicky Butt?
Yeah, but it's where he pinched him.
Nicky's butt? Yeah.
Not quite. Butt. Other way, other side.
Nipple, wouldn't it? I thought.
End of his cock.
No, it wasn't, was it?
I heard it was a bit low down.
Why hasn't there been any retrospective VAR looking at the obvious pinching of Rudiger's thigh? Why has nothing happened with that?
I mean, because
you just don't get done for that. It's not dangerous play.
Well, what is it then?
You just look like a bit of a bell end.
Graham Lasso, who I got to know very well. I worked with him back in 2006, and he's a very misunderstood bloke. He's got a huge sense of humour, and I really like Graham Lasso. And he told me a hilarious story about when he first played against, I think he was playing for England, one of his first England matches, and he ended up playing against Italy. And he learned very quickly the dark arts of Italian football, that every time, I think it might have even been Gentile, actually, although I could be wrong. But anyway, whoever it was, whenever they got close to him, they would link arms and then basically try and rip the nipple hair away from him. He said it was excruciating. But they were always having a jab at him somehow like that. And it always involved pinching or something like that. But anyway, we digress. Martin and Sam as well, actually, because I think, actually, I'll ask you, Sam. I know we're all loving Giroud's brilliance, which we absolutely should. Of course, a moment in the same breath, both ruined and exonerated by VAR, but nevertheless a brilliant moment. But actually, Christensen really caught my eye. I was really worried about the fact that we weren't going to have the experience of Silva at the heart of the defence, but I thought Christensen was superb, even, you know, notwithstanding Atletico Madrid weren't that ambitious, but I thought he was really good. We lost you, mate. You muted yourself. Say that again.
No, that's all right. Here. Can you? I say he's been fantastic since he came into the side. I mean, I remember when Silva went down against Spurs, there was a lot of worry about how Chelsea's defence would cope without Thiago Silva there. But Christensen's come in and has done fantastically well. I mean, you have to think the only goal that has been conceded when he's been on the pitch was Rudiger's own goal against Sheffield United. He wasn't on the pitch for Takumi Minamino's goal for Southampton. So he didn't have much to do in midweek, but what he did do, he did well. And you can see why he fares much better in a back three than he does in if you're playing a flat back four. Vice versa, Kurt Zouma is probably better in a back four than he is in a back five. But you can see why Tuchel has preferred Christensen. And he didn't have much to do, but he just did the basics right. He won his aerial challenges when he needed to, which was a bit of a knock against him, is that he was not necessarily as strong in the air as Kurt Zouma was. But I thought he was fantastic. I think I put a tweet out saying how good he was, I think, in that game in the week. So yeah, he's been brilliant. It's almost made the loss of Silva not as badly felt as we all thought it would be. And he deserves immense credit.
He does indeed. And I mean, actually, to an extent, so does Tuchel, for understanding if you put players in their best positions, who knew? They play quite well. Now, somebody else who plays well every week, JK, who we absolutely adore hugely, is Mason Mount, who got booked. I thought the referee was particularly officious, but they tend to be, don't they, in Europe. But he got a yellow card, which means he misses the next leg. But on the plus side, so does Jorginho. So not all is lost. So have you still
got it against Jorginho? I didn't think it was bad.
I'm making a joke, mate. But, you know, I think Jorginho is great at what he does. It's just that what he does, I don't think, is necessarily good enough against teams that have an element of ambition. We'll talk about this.
But then why does the manager keep picking him?
Well, because I think... I mean, funny enough, I've written. I shouldn't tell Sam this because I owe him one, and I haven't done it yet. But I've just done my CFC UK piece, which is it was basically picking up on Tony's wonderfully epic rant about footballing dressage. But actually, I countered that by saying that actually, you know, I can understand why Tuchel needs a player like Jorginho for most of the games at the moment, because he is good at keeping possession. Although I have to say, he gave the ball away a lot against Atletico. But generally, he's a risk-averse football player. And if you've got a team that are lacking in confidence and haven't really, you know, been getting many wins, which is the case when Tuchel came in, you do have to go back to basics. And basics is not letting in any goals and keeping hold of the ball. Because when you've got the ball, the opposition aren't going to hurt you. So I do see the point of Jorginho, but I still don't think we've really played it. I mean, we'll talk about it later, I know, but on Sunday it could be very different because we're going to play a team that's going to really have at us. And I do worry about him in that situation. And frankly, I think that Kante and Kovacic are much better footballers than him, and I would much rather see them in there. But hey, it's a game of opinions, and I don't claim to have the divine right to be right on it. It's just how I feel.
I think it's also picking up the killer pass. I think he tries to play killer passes. A few times he overhit. There was a period in the first half when they overhit.
Yeah.
But
there was a lot of overhit passes in that game. I don't know whether it was, you know, someone had a club foot, or it was just a really shit pitch. But it was a bit, the whole game felt
both a bit sides weird. Did it as well. Didn't it? But I still think I'm trying to look at what Tuchel appreciates in him, because we all have this thing about Jorginho. He doesn't cope with players that are basically he's not quick enough to deal with anybody running at him. The fact that Tuchel picks him, I want to see what the manager is attempting to do in this instance.
Keep the ball.
It's clearly something that he thinks is absolutely correct, rather than play Kante and Kovacic.
But I think it's that. I mean, Sam might have a view on this because he has to, you know, get his hands much dirtier than we do on this. But I think, Sam, it's about keeping the ball, and that's why he likes him, right?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. And the fact that he recycles the ball quickly as well, I think that helps. But I think, it's a really tough decision that he's got to make between Jorginho and Kante. I thought Kante was incredible against Southampton. He was back to his best.
He was, wasn't he? Yeah.
The Kante that we know from the last few years, not just with Chelsea as well, but with Leicester. But Jorginho has usurped him at the moment. And I think it's just the fact that he gets the ball, gets his head up and recycles it quickly and keeps the ball moving. I think that's what it is.
He does that thing really well of looking as if he's going in one direction and then turning around in the other. And he's suddenly got a massive space. You just think, yeah, that's actually quite clever. There's some clever moments in Jorginho's play.
But the weak, you know, we cannot at the same, you know, in the same breath, we've got to actually, you know, talk about his weaknesses too. And I mean, we've seen it happen. Yeah,
them.
I mean, so many times, smart. I mean, it was really interesting. I thought that Hasenhüttl put two men on Alonso, which basically took him out of the game. You know, you do that with. I think that's the thing for me about Jorginho. He's very one-dimensional. You know what you get out of him. What you get out of him when it's the right game is superb, and there are very few better at it. But if you get a smart manager, you can take him out of the game. You put two people on him, you close him down, you put him under pressure, or you just bypass him, you run past him, and therefore, you know, that's what worries me. But anyway, let's not make this into a Jorginho show. I need to pick up on a couple of things with you, Sam, that have, you know, come to light in Football London, particularly this week. There's some really good stuff that you've been doing, you boys, you and Adam and a few others. Tammy stalling on his contract. I think that got picked up from somewhere else. But, of course, the other news is Roman's war chest and how that might relate to us getting Haaland. So would you like to apprise us of these wonderful, nuanced stories?
Yeah, well, I mean, Erling Haaland's going to be linked with anyone and everyone, I think. Well, actually, that's not the case, because his agent came out in the week, didn't he, Mino Raiola, and said that maybe, I think, was it seven clubs could afford him and four of them are in the Premier League and one of them is Chelsea. I think striker is still an area that I think it's pretty clear that Chelsea want to strengthen is up front. That's not saying that they should sell Olivier Giroud. I think Chelsea should give him another contract personally. I'm not sure if that's a controversial opinion or not, but I think they should.
I love him.
He's wonderful.
We'd all love that, wouldn't we?
Absolutely.
He absolutely should stay I know Chelsea's obviously their policy with offering players over 30 big contracts, etc. But so whatever they do, I think they should keep him. But yeah, Haaland, you've got to look towards the future as well. He is alongside Kylian Mbappe, obviously, is the signing that you want to make. He is the player in Europe that you want to have at your club. He looks like he was built in some sort of laboratory for a striker, how good he is.
And it's a bit like Ivan Drago, doesn't it? There is a bit of that.
If you're going to push yourself over the top, then Haaland's the kind of signing that you'd make. And we know that Roman's obviously not afraid to splash the cash. We know that. That's not exactly a secret. So whether they can get him this summer, we'll see. But I think if there's going to be the big money signing that Chelsea make this summer, then it will be they'll certainly be chasing after Haaland, but they won't be the only ones. So whether they can attract him or not, we'll see. But they need to get top four. That's an absolute minimum to get that over the line for a start.
Martin?
When did we start dealing with Mino Raiola? Is what I want to know. I don't think anyone every time Man United have a bad result, he's trying to get Pogba out the back door there. So I'm not sure we need to be dealing with that prick too much. And plus, our record with strikers is such, I'm still concerned that we'll end up signing the son and getting the finishing power of his dad. So.
I'm not sure you could get any worse. I'm not sure you could.
Well, then Alfinger Haaland.
No, I honestly, I don't see how you could even potentially ruin Haaland.
We'll find a way.
I know Chelsea in their record.
Yeah, and then we'll go, who's fucking born in Leeds? I'm not having that, blah, blah, blah.
I think
he would be an incredible signing.
I think he would. I mean, look, I think what we all tend to forget, we all live in a bit of a fancy football world in our own heads, but there are no guarantees in life about anything. So just because people are really, really good somewhere else doesn't necessarily guarantee that they're going to be brilliant for us. But I think, Sam, I mean, picking up from a lot of the writing that's been doing the rounds this week, it does look as if Roman's going to go large in the summer. I mean, we might not get Haaland, but Roman is going to splash the cash. That's a pretty certainty, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. There's obviously the financial impact with coronavirus, but then it affects some clubs more than others. And I think Chelsea will still be able to buy the players that they would like to buy if they can, obviously, if they're available. So I'm still expecting a busy summer in terms of personally for work. I think I'm going to be quite busy this summer, but I'm also expecting Chelsea to have a busy summer because, yeah, Tammy Abraham, Olivier Giroud, Giroud, I think as we all agreed on, Giroud should stay. I mean, what would your opinion be on Tammy Abraham? Would you keep him around? Or,
well, personally,
to the panel.
Well, I would, because I think that he's still young and I think he can still get better, and I think his record speaks for itself, and I don't think that can be ignored. But, you know, there is an interesting reality there too, isn't there? I mean, we look at Mason Mount and we can say, Jesus, this guy, he's got it all now. I mean, he will only get better, but he's good enough now. Tammy has a way to go, I think, before he is good enough to be, you know, a club that wants to win the Premier League and wants to compete and win the Champions League again. He's a long way off that. But I think it's too early to write him off, Jonathan.
If you bought a star striker, where would Tammy play? Probably not. So therefore...
Well, then, yeah, you know, that's where we are.
What's the use of keeping him? You might as well cash in on him.
Yeah, but I mean, you could say the same about Giroud, couldn't you? I mean, if we buy a new striker, clearly somebody's got to go. It's not going to be Timo Werner. That means it's either going to be Tammy or Giroud. And if it's a choice between Tammy and Giroud, I would let Giroud go.
He's going to make the decision, isn't he, by refusing to sign the contract?
Yeah, but Matt Law was saying he doesn't think that's right. And I mean, as Sam will testify, you know, Matt usually knows what he's talking about. Yeah.
He knows a bit more than I do.
Well, I wouldn't say that necessarily, Sam. But I mean, you know, I think Matt's a credible guy. He's pretty close to the club. Listen, Sam, we've got to let you go. But before we've got to let you go, Sam. Have you got any biggies coming up this week? I mean, you know, Adam gave us a little bit of a... He didn't tell us exactly. He actually WhatsApped me afterwards. I still haven't told everybody else. And I don't think it's seen the light yet. But have you got any biggies coming up this week?
I personally haven't, no, but Adam does. He's got a couple of interviews lined up, I know, that he's conducted in the last couple of days, so they'll certainly be worth watching. But me personally, well, I'm kind of revolving around matches and things at the moment, and what with the ridiculous amount of fixtures that we've got going on at the moment, it's actually quite hard to try and get your teeth into bits and bobs.
Yeah, but, I bet.
All I'll say is just, if you like, give me a follow on Twitter and keep an eye on Football London, and then they can read your column as well, Chidge.
They can when I write it, which with a bit of luck will be tomorrow morning, Sam. So who's at the game on Sunday? You or Adam?
That's me. I'm at the game on Sunday. So one of us will try and get your
all right
column up on Sunday morning for sure.
Well, to all the listeners, make sure you follow @Sam_Ingersoll_TM, and then you'll get all the latest of what's going on at the Bridge on Sunday. Sam, as always, it's a real delight to have you on the show. We love seeing you. Stay safe. Enjoy the game on Sunday, and we will see you back here soon.
Now, as always, thank you very much for having me on, mate. Appreciate it. Good to see you all.
Brilliant stuff. Right, after this very short but very sweet break, we have the return of a legend, a Chelsea Fancast legend, even though technically he was never part of the Chelsea Fancast. All will be revealed after this break.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to Chidge and the Boys on the Chelsea Football Fancast. Total nutters and proper Chelsea.
footballfancast.com.
Right, welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast with me, Stamford Chidge. Him down there, the coiffured Mr. Jonathan Kidd.
Whoop.
And the lovely, intelligent, the brains of an otherwise no-brain outfit, Mr. Martin Wickham.
I've been called brainy before. You're very kind.
You are, you are. Now, of course, every week on the Friday, we like to get an opposition fan in where we do this.
The Opposition View.
And this week is a real treat for me and Jonathan in particular, because for, well, I mean, you know, basically we've pilfered the idea of doing a Friday night preview show from our previous incarnation on Love Sport Radio, which we miss hugely. One of the reasons why we miss it hugely is because some poor, unsuspecting, lovely, professional broadcaster used to have to put up with us absolutely ripping out of him and behaving very, very badly. And amazingly enough, he still likes us and he still talks to us and he actually has agreed to come on tonight. And his name is the wonderful Aaron Paul.
I've never been called the wonderful Aaron.
Well, you are wonderful, mate. We loved you, mate.
I'll take that. Thank you, mate. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be back after, what, 2 years?
Is it 2 years?
2 years since I left.
Wowzers.
2 years since I left last sport. 2 years since I joined the dark side of the corporation. And, well, I rejoined the corporation and you know.
I wanted to ask you about that because you know, obviously we made you famous when you hosted the Chelsea Fancast. But you really are famous now. You're on the BBC, mate. Good God, what's happening?
Yeah, it's amazing how it's all taken off. But yeah, I'm one of the voices at the football on Saturdays. I cover a lot of EFL. I cover mainly Football League. I've got a new show. I'm actually on the radio tonight, 9 o'clock, BBC Radio 5 Live. So we're
wow. Is that the squad?
Yeah, no, 72 plus. It's the Football League show with we've got Danny Cowley, Glenn Murray. We've got Ryan Lowe, Plymouth manager, and we've got the new Wimbledon manager, Mark Robinson, as well. So beefy show, beefy pod. We're loving it. Well, I'll tell you something, you know, I was in a terrible mood the other day. Terrible mood the other day. Right? And, you know, sometimes you just need to find something that really cheers you up. And I thought, What would do it? And, you know, a lot of people would you know, fire up incognito mode on their laptops and search for something that's potentially, you know, let's just say, you know, on the other side of what we're looking for. This is a family
dark web,
show.
Dark web, yeah.
The dark webs, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I went into YouTube and I just searched Jonathan Kidd animation reel. And I swear, nothing gives me more joy. JCat, I've got to say, mate, I miss you terribly.
Oh, I thought you were going to say
so much, man.
Bangers and mash, I thought you were going to say.
Oh, I miss you. I miss Clayton. I miss Mark. Jeez, there was a point in time when Mark used to bring that style of every week. And he started singing Chelsea Rent Boys, and obviously that's just Ofcom. And I was like, no. There's something good video on my Instagram. He's like, dun, 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 dun. And he builds it up and he's like, Chelsea. I'm like, no. And you just see me hit the dump button and Paddy just screwing in the box. But, you know, we had such a good year together. I mean, literally, it was like a bike ride to Banana Hill, wasn't it?
It was like a bike ride to Banana Hill. That's so true.
We had fun.
It's really funny, actually, because you mentioned Paddy. Paddy, our collectively, our long-suffering producer on Love Sport. And you know, we had a vote this week on the Monday version of the Chelsea Fancast as to whether, because of course Paddy's also a Man United fan,
yeah.
You know, and who should we get as our Man United opposition view, Aaron or Paddy? And you got the vote unanimously. Much as we love Paddy, you won hands down, mate.
That's because he's more Aggie than me. And you don't want Aggie. Like, he'd just sit there and go, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, but no. He'd just say potato.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. You know, I can't really sort of just say something like that.
I can.
He'd literally just sit here and get ag. I'll try and give you a bit of insight and sort of my thoughts on things. But yeah, it's good to be back.
It's lovely, Aaron. It's lovely to see you. But I mean, I have to say, you know, on a serious point, I'm delighted to see, you know, how well you're doing on Five Live, and you're doing some great work there. And it's lovely to see some good things happening to good people. You know, particularly after I got the tin tack from Love Sport, you know, my career's obviously gone down the toilet.
Everyone,
I'm not bitter. I'm not bitter or envious at all, mate.
Because it's called budget.
You deserve it all, mate. You deserve it.
At the end of the day, look, you know, I can probably talk about it. I can probably talk about it now. It's 2 years on and everything. They've paid me and all that. But the fact of the matter is that some slippery nonce decided he wanted my job. And so he decided to undercut me and do it for a cheaper price. And the fact of the matter, the scary fact of the matter is that, you know, obviously I had Millwall fans threatening to blow the gaff up, which is great.
That's true, isn't it?
The Millwall boys literally were like, we'll go in there and we'll just start swearing. I was like, nah, don't do that, don't do that. But, you know, it's just the way it is in the sort of broadcasting world. Someone else thought they can come in, do a cheaper job. Myself and Bubba both left. Brian Moore left.
Disgusting! Disgusting!
That's the thing, is he couldn't say your name. He's called you Stamford Fridge, didn't he? Stamford Fridge. Myself, Brian left. A lot of people left on one day. It was one day. It was the 5th of March.
Yeah.
One day, everyone got cold, which was actually a year to the day they started the station.
Yeah.
And, you know, the messages I got from a lot of Chelsea fans, I never ever got to come on and say thank you. The amount of messages I got from Chelsea fans was unreal.
Well, Aaron, because you know we're live. You know this is
Ollie.
Yeah, this is live, mate. It goes out on Mixlr, mate, which is a slightly bigger radio network than BBC, obviously. But,
no, ever so slightly.
But we got some messages in tonight, and as you're lovely, I'm going to read them out to you from Brian Justman. He says Aaron was the best presenter on the Love Sport Fancast. Apart from me, obviously, Brian, is what you meant to say. But much better than the chap that took over for him from English Dan. Yeah. English Dan also says he did a wonderful job. So there you go. There's a lot of love out there from a lot of people who would listen in every Friday.
We had some of the best times on that show.
We did.
I mean, the one thing I regret is going to Dubai when you had Spy on. I was gutted.
Good program. Yeah,
which is brilliant. But every week, you know what? Seeing yourself, seeing Kiddo, seeing, you know, Clayton and everyone. You guys were such a brilliant, brilliant tonic in a place which was very toxic at points of work. And you guys were so good. And you know what?
Aaron, we'll be different from other podcasts.
Were you different? You're more organised. You had like sort of spells of nuttiness, you know. You had a guy, Dan Silver, who'd sit and eat his dinner during the whole thing, and he'd just wrestle along. And one day, Paddy was like, "That's it, Dan, no more fucking food." Yeah, and it was just hilarious. He used to order Deliveroo to the studio, and he'd be like, do you want a bit of burger?
He did.
We're doing radio, pal. You had JK who one day turned up in a penguin outfit. I don't know why, I've still got a video of him. You have JK who'd fall asleep during shows, which is the best thing. He'd sit there like that, he'd go, "Actually, I think Rudiger's quite good." And he'd be like, "Where's he come from?" You know? You had Marco who was just, you know, just, you don't know what was going to come out next. But you know what? We had such good fun, Chidge.
Yeah.
We had such
they've been keeping me entertained loyally and royally for 13 years. And they're
very lucky.
I'm blessed. They're a cracking bunch. I'm proud and delighted to call them all great mates. The one thing that I miss, like you in a way, but I miss not seeing them in the boozer for a pint or few on a match day. And we should talk about the match because we've got you on, obviously, because you are, apart from everything else, you're a big Man United fan.
Yeah, no, I did. Yeah.
So let's tuck straight into this massive, mahoosive match coming up on Sunday.
Yeah.
Obviously, I'm amazed to hear this, but you lot have not lost away since the last time we beat you, I think, something like that. I think we're the last to beat you away. But anyway, you haven't lost away all season. I think we're going for four consecutive, not conceding a goal matches for a long time. So it's going to be a real, real massive match. Now, first thing, in view of the fact that, you know, I remember earlier in the season, everybody was talking about Frank Lampard managing Chelsea, Arteta managing Arsenal, Stevie Gerrard managing Rangers, and of course, Ollie managing United. Many people thought that he'd be gone by now, and he's still there. He's still at the wheel. So do you think sticking with Ollie, given that you're second in the league, has been vindicated?
I think that's a very, very bad question, mate. I think that's a terrible question, Chidge. Because at the end of the day, if you look at the Premier League, there's only one team out there that's actually consistent, that's actually putting runs together, that's actually in form, and that's City. Every other team has the potential to sort of move and shift positions left, right and centre. And one thing about United is that actually, considering we got dicked by Spurs, and we didn't get beat, we got dicked by Spurs. after that, I genuinely thought we're bang in trouble. And, you know, I have a United podcast as well, the Manchester United Redcast. And, you know, we sit and it was depressing at some points. But he's grinding results out. Similar to Fergie before the first sort of trophy, the first FA Cup, he was grinding results out, ticking over, ticking over, ticking over. And I don't know if it's a case of, is it right that he's still in the job? But I think he's still in the job because they didn't go for Poch. I think if Poch was still available, there would be question marks every time he walked, every time he farted, every time he breathed. Because Ollie had a you know, he had a price on his head. He had a figure on his head for a long, long time. And I just constantly thought that back-to-back defeats in any game, and we'd be in trouble. But saying that, we've shown glimpses where we've actually looked like a good team. You know, obviously, look, we beat Southampton 9-0. Yeah, they had a man sent off, two men sent off, and one of the goals was offside and whatever, you know, but we beat 9-0. We start six past Leeds. Then again, people do it every other week, and yeah, fine. But there's been points where we've looked like a real cohesive, good unit. There's been points where we've looked shit. There's also been points where we've looked like we flattered to the sea. We've looked worrying in points, like really worrying in points.
I can ask you, does that depend on his selection? Because he seems to change four.
It's inconsistent. JK,
you change four and you think, why has he dropped them?
Yeah.
And then you watch a side and you think he's got them all together, all playing really well. And the next game, there are three out. And you think, are they in?
Nailhead hits the on. You just rearrange those words, mate. You smashed it right there. You know, the back line, you look at it, Eric by, you know what, he's an absolute nutcase, but he's our nutcase and we love him. He's an athlete. And when you've got defenders in the ilk of Harold Maguire and Lindelof, Lindelof is not a good centre-half, by the way. He's shit. He's real, real dog shit. The problem is that we've got eight centre-halves and they're all dog shit. You know, apart from Bailly, who's a good centre-half, and he's just not consistent enough. But the way Ollie rotates the back line, the way he rotates the midfield as well, the whole Pogba in, Pogba out situation, it's not been good. Even the front line as well. You know, he continually picks Martial, where Cavani was a better option, yet he'd wait to bring Cavani on. Even Ahmed Diallo yesterday, you know, they paid £40 million for a kid who no one knows anything about. He's played two games or something in his career. Everyone apparently is raving about him now because they've seen videos on YouTube of him training and, yeah, he looks great. Why not play him yesterday against Real Sociedad? We're 4-0 up in the first leg. Play him, but he won't. He'll play it safe. And
that selection for Sociedad was strange. I thought there'd be a lot more players. I mean, Choratire came on, but the rest of it was just that's too strong a team for a 4-0 lead.
De Beek, did he play him?
He's injured.
Oh, he's injured, okay.
Van der Beek's injured, Cavani's injured, Pogba's injured, McTominay's injured. So, you know, the injuries are hitting us. But again, you know, you look at it and people talk about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and him as a manager. This whole De Gea Henderson debate is rattling on. Is really going to rattle on.
Well, and I mean, I was going to ask you, Aaron. I mean, do you think, because De Gea is supposed to be one of these great goalkeepers, but he looks like a liability to me half the time. And you have got Henderson sitting there who's proved himself to be an absolute quality goalkeeper who you might lose. So is De Gea a liability?
Well, this is Chelsea, 4 years ago? Courtois and Cech, isn't it? All over again, where you've got someone on the bench who doesn't want to be on the bench.
They should have kept Cech. In fact, they did. He's in our squad.
Yeah, he is, isn't he? He's still there. Unreal. Absolutely unreal.
With his helmet.
Is he still playing ice hockey?
I don't know, mate. Is he still playing the drums? I think
Guildford,
isn't he?
He's playing in Guildford.
Guildford Flames or something like that.
Anyway, De Gea, is he a liability?
I don't know if he's a liability. I think his race is run. I think his race is run. 30 years old. I think there's a time to cash in, and I think that time to cash in is now. Juventus, Real Madrid, someone like that, go for it. And then go for Henderson and give Henderson that opportunity. To be honest, I'm surprised Romero didn't get that opportunity. Romero's older than De Gea, granted, but, you know, a fantastic goalkeeper. I think someone that maybe Chelsea should have looked at in the summer. Other clubs should have looked at Sergio Romero in the summer. Everton were looking at him, apparently, but United didn't want to sell him to to what's deemed a rival. But you look at it, we've always been blessed with goalkeepers, but now we've come to a real point, a real junction. And the problem Ollie's always had, and I was speaking to someone, I can't name who it is, but someone who was in Sir Alex Ferguson's backroom staff and who is a soundboard for Ollie.
Brian Kidd.
No, mate, Kidd, I don't want nothing to do with United nowadays. What are you on about?
Mike Phelan.
No, I'm not telling you, Chidge. I'm not telling you. I had a beer with this person.
Jimmy Murphy.
Did he manage Fulham? No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
So it's not Reddy Mullenstein. He's out.
I know his daughter, though. I work with his daughter. His daughter works at BBC Radio Manchester. But I had a chat with this guy, and he told me that Ollie phoned him when De Gea was struggling last season and asked him, have I made a mistake? And this person turns around to him and goes, you need to get Henderson back there ASAP. ASAP.
Good kid.
Get him back there. Get him playing Europa League. Get him playing FA Cup. Get him playing League Cup. And put some pressure up him. Because at the end of the day, Chidge, you're in a job. Kiddo, you're in a job. Whatever. You know what? Actually, you're two terrible people to pick because you both work for yourselves.
Yeah, exactly. We're not stupid.
But, you know, you put fire up someone and they're going to perform better. You look at Luke Shaw with Alex Telles now. You know, Luke Shaw's having the season of his life. This is his best season.
Best player, occasionally best player on the pitch for me.
Fantastic. But that's because they brought Telles back or Telles in. Yeah. Now, they've brought Henderson in and you'd automatically think De Gea is going to play better. But what it seemed to have done is fired Henderson up even more. And he looks good. He looks good. I don't think any change will happen now. I think the change will come in the summer. Apparently, and this is according to one of the main football writers out there, United have said that one of Henderson or De Gea won't be there in the summer. And for my money, it'll be De Gea.
Okay, well, look, one person who will, I'm sure, be there and who's actually been there for you for most of this season has been a superb buy for you is Fernandes. Who, apart from being a cheating diver, we have to say that on the Chelsea Fancast, he is a superb player. There's no doubt about that, and I would say he's the biggest threat to us on Sunday. But you must have loved. I mean, he's been the difference for you lot this year. I would say
he's been the difference since he walked through the door.
Yeah,
he's our best signing since Robin van Persie. You look at the players who've had an impact. No one in those, however much we spent since Alex Ferguson retired, the only player that's come close to actually putting in the amount of effort is Ander Herrera. But he was blessed with less technical ability and less skill. Bruno Fernandes has been absolutely unreal. He carries our team. But there's that old thing where you'll have rival fans turn around going, oh, well, if you didn't have Bruno Fernandes, you'd be fourth or something like that. Well, you know what, mate? If, you know...
If my auntie was my uncle, she'd have bollocks.
Thank you. Something like that. You know, it's like when, you know, De Gea was saving us under LVG and Mourinho. People were like, oh, if you didn't have De Gea, you'd be relegated or something like that. This is why you buy those players. This is why you scout those players and you buy those players. Yeah. And if you look at United over the past few years, we haven't signed the right players. We haven't bought the right players. But this is fair play to Ollie. He's picked the right one.
I have to say, Aaron. Sorry, go on, JK. Go on.
You do buy a large number of players, don't you?
They do.
They did. Now they're taking their time on everything and it's becoming painful. We're missing out on people left, right and centre.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, Aaron, I have to say, for a team that are second in the league, albeit this is a very weird, screwed up year, and we all know that, you sound a bit depressed as a United fan. I expect you to be a bit more chirpy tonight.
It's not about being depressed. It's the fact that if you look at it and you ask anyone, you ask a blind man what United need, and they need a centre half. Mm. They'll tell you they need a centre half. Yeah. Yet again, we're pissing around. We're wasting time.
Like we did with missing out on Upamecano by any chance?
Well, missed on Upamecano. I think the one that we missed out big time was, I think we missed out on Van Dijk back in the day. We missed out on Van Dijk. We missed out on Alderweireld as well, when he had that clause at Spurs. Apparently they wanted him, but then Daniel Levy and whatever. But again, we're playing this game again where we're hoping to drive people down. Look at Sancho. 2 years to sign a player. They might go in now, and granted, they might get him 10 million cheaper or 20 million cheaper, but there's a chance they might pay over the odds.
Here's a question for you, because I think what I'm hearing here, which is quite interesting, is a remarkable similarity between our two beloved clubs at the moment. And I wonder if, you know, because our transfer policy is absolutely why we're in, frankly, the mess that we're in, even though, you know, we'll probably scrape through to get top four again. But all the revolving managers has caused us to buy some really daft signings and we can't get rid of them. And that's because the business wags the football, you know, the business tail wags the football dog. Is that the same that's happening at United?
Oh, mate, we're a glorified cash cow.
Yeah.
We are franchisees. You know, that's what we are. It's an absolute disgrace. Tell you what, you want proper football fuckeries? Shall I give you a class bit of football fuckeries? United's record shirt sponsorship deal with Chevrolet ends this coming summer. This was a deal that was brokered by someone at Chevrolet and was deemed so bad that he got sacked 6 months later because it was a record deal. They didn't need it. They didn't want it. But General Motors sacked the guy off. United now have been sat there and their biggest thing is we need a shirt sponsor. Who are we going to get on the front of the shirt? They've done a deal with Chevrolet to extend the shirt sponsorship to New Year. What does that mean? That means that next year they'll release three new kits, but they'll want fans to buy a new set of kits in the summer and a new set of kits in January at £75 a hit.
Scandalous.
Yeah, so that's 450 quid on shirts they want to sell. They're trying to double the income, bang, bang, bang. It's all about money. It's all about money for the Glazers and for their little rent boy guy, Ed Woodward. That's all it's ever been about. And, you know, this whole kit sponsorship thing, it's a disgrace when you think about it. Surely the FA should step in and go, you know what, no kit sponsor changes during the season. How can you change kit sponsor in January? And go, here, fans, we're going to print a new kit with Saudi Telecom on the front. Get your new United shirt. Sack off the Chevrolet one. But this is what we're about.
Yeah.
This is what we're about. At the end of the day, the stats are very clear. Glazers have taken out £1.1 billion in the past 10 years. They have not put a penny into this club. This is the scary truth. In England, the only club whose owners have not put any money in is Manchester United. Yeah. It's self-sustainable and some. They can take cash out. Glazer's daughter has started taking cash out and taking money out of the club and just using it for whatever. And they, granted, they're the owners, they can do what they want. But ultimately, let me tell you, Ed Woodward and co, they're very, very lucky that fans aren't in there. They're very lucky because before COVID, it was starting to get a little bit messy where fans were starting to protest, you know, the United, and they know about it. Indoors, they know all about it. And they tactically ban people and, you know, revoke their tickets when they get to the gate and stuff like that. They play little games and they, you know, block Twitter accounts and stuff like that. It was getting messy. And it's weird because this sort of breakwater that we've had with COVID has actually worked very, very well for the United board. When it comes to... Go on, JK.
Symbolically, will they start wearing the green and white shirts again, do you think, when we're all allowed back in?
Oh, United fans?
Green and gold.
Yeah, green and
the
gold.
Proper fans will. I mean, look, I've got one upstairs from the supporters, just the proper fans will. But the fact of the matter is, JK, for every one actual fan, one supporter, there's five or six people in different countries who will spunk money in the club shop and will go and absolutely go for it.
You're right, Chidge. They don't care. Similar, isn't it, Chidge?
They don't care.
Chidge's is very similar, isn't it?
Well, I think that's the point I was making. There's a huge comparison to be made. I mean, because, you know, the reality is, Aaron, and I know you hate it as much as we all do, it's a successful model to a degree, certainly commercially, and that's where our club is now. It's all about the commercial side of it. You know, as long as they, you know, Tony, who's not with us tonight, but coined the phrase ages ago, the Arsenalification of Chelsea. But it's putting up with mediocrity because it makes you as much, if not more, money, and it's rubbish. It's so refreshing, I have to say, Aaron. It's really lovely in some respects to hear a really honest perspective of that. And I feel your pain, buddy, I have to say. Although what I would say is that any of us who like to give Roman Abramovich a bit of a knee in the bollocks occasionally should you know, listen to what Aaron said about his club. He ain't as bad as the Glazers.
I remember when you guys switched to Nike, I think it was in 2018, and you guys were talking about the Nike store and going in there and trying to get something basic, and you can't.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't simply go and do that. Over-commercialization of everything has bastardized football.
Yeah.
That's the word, bastardized football.
Totally right.
You know, and people sit there and they turn around to me and, you know, they're like, why won't you buy from the club shop? And I won't. I'll wait until it's with Classic Football Shirts. I'd rather support a small business.
Yeah.
I'll buy from Classic Football Shirts and I'll buy my whatever replica shirt I want or whatever. Mate, I've just gone and done £100 in the Wimbledon club shop. You know why? They need the money more.
Yeah.
That's what you call a football club.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it took, look at what happened to them, because it's very, very similar. They got sold a dream, or the owners got sold a dream. They realised they were fucked. And it was Premier League money. It was the fact that they were spending £7.5 million on John Hartson. They sold Carl Court. They sold Jason Newell. They sold all these players. The owners pocketed the money and it all went bang. It's such a scary reality.
It is indeed, mate. I'd love to... we could do 2 hours just on this comparison, I think. But we better not, because we've got to roll along. How do you see it going on Sunday? I mean, I think it's going to be quite a tight match myself, but what do you think?
Always is going to be tight. To be honest, let's be honest, Chidge, the games between the big dogs this season, I think the majority of them have been draws and been kind of crap. I can see it being one of them 1-1, 0-0, 1-1, something like that, just a bit dead, really. I'll sit there with my Pringles, I'll try and enjoy it, but to be honest, it will be a game of few chances, I believe, for us. And whatever chances we get, Anthony Martial will spunk them.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. JK.
Tuchel will attempt to stifle, because he beat you in both away legs in the Champions League with PSG, didn't he?
And lost at home.
No, they lost at home.
Yeah, they lost in the Parc des Princes,
That's only because Buffon was a bit...
He
got a bit, you know...
Right.
He parried that shot out to Lukaku, didn't he? And Lukaku smashed it home, and then we had the penalty at the end. That was a very much a one-off game. But the home leg, they played very well against us. I was there. It was actually me and Paddy. Me and Paddy went to that game together. We took a rare night off. It was West Ham that night. We took all night off.
It should be interesting just from the point of view that he's very tuned in to United, Tuchel. So I think he'll have some interesting tactics up his sleeve.
I think he'll be worried. I think, quite rightly, as we were alluding to earlier, he will be worried about United's ability on their counter-attack and their pace and their ability to attack us, and the fact that they just won't sit back, because we've not had to face that. So I think he will look to snuff that out. So that's why I'm kind of with you, Aaron. I mean, irrespective of whether Martial spunks any chances he gets.
That's if he can be bothered, Chooch.
Yeah, you know, I do think it's going to be a real... It's got draw written all over it, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So go on then. Let's have a prediction.
What the panel say?
Well, I don't know. I'm going to ask you. What do you reckon? Stick a number on it.
1-1.
1-1. Yeah. Doesn't really do either of us any good. I mean, it's all right for you. You'll still be in second. But we could really do with all 3 points, to be honest.
It's just... Look, at the end of the day, City are romping their way to this league.
They are, aren't they? But hey, Aaron... Better than Liverpool winning it, let's be honest.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. The only hope I've got now is that they don't go and win sort of the treble or the quadruple. Really piss me off, you know, that'd be bad.
Yeah.
But, you know, just... It's one of them ones, Chid. And, you know, it for me as well, the fans not being there, you know, I'd love a good bridge occasion, a real good bridge occasion. Yeah. Sunday afternoon, it gets a bit dark, you go down there, you can see him eating his Smarties up in... Was it your breast of pheasant pre-game, you know, with a rosemary jus, you know, you just have Alex swearing at every and you know, the away fan. It's beautiful.
It will have been gilded salmon this weekend. That's, I'm pretty sure.
But it's just without. I don't know about you. For me, you know, I have the privilege of going to football every week, and it's sad, Chid.
Because you're actually commentating in stadia where there are no fans. Yeah. So what's that like, mate?
The sad thing is I've become so used to it. I've become so used to it because things have changed for us. Whereas we were, we're press, we're media, and we get bits and pieces. Now we have designated parking next to our entrance bit. So literally we walk in, we get all checked out, we have to do our paperwork. There's hordes of paperwork before the game. We go in, we sit there, and we don't move. We do not move from our seats. We don't leave. The only place you can go is the bathroom. That's it. And it's strange. It's sad, man. You know, the amount of things, excuse me, that have been like missed, you know, occasions that have been missed because there's no fans. So I'm real. And the weird thing is, and you know, I'm not very, I'm not really an emotional person, but you know, I went to Norwich and there are 2,000 fans in there. And you know, when the players came out to warm up, there was just a slight, it was so emotional.
Yeah.
You just heard the music and you just hear them coming out and the fans applauding and singing. And oh my God, it was emotional. And you know, like I said to a colleague the other day, you know, obviously if we're not commentating, we're reporting. If we go and report, you know, you use the enthusiasm of the crowd and your voice and you can really...
You're normally picking up, aren't you? Nice. You're belting over them.
Yes, exactly, JK. Yeah. And, you know, not having them. Like, the other day, I was Carrow Road last week. They're playing scintillating football. You're waiting for the goal. The goal goes. They play the little goal music. Da, na, 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 na. Yeah, great, cool. But where's the fans?
Yeah.
And I just missed that noise. And I said to my colleague, you know that back of the net noise? God, it is unreal. And I will never, ever take football fans, I'll never take it for granted again. And, you know, people have asked me a lot of questions about whether I think things will go back to normal or whether I think, you know, fans will go to grounds or they'll sit and watch at home. Do you know what? I think grounds will be even more packed. I think the demand for football in grounds will be even bigger and the atmospheres are going to get better. They're really going to get better.
It may well be true that I think...
It'd be like Chelsea Moscow Dynamo in 1946 after the war, where there were 120,000 people there and they all got on the, all came on the pitch and watched by the side of the goal because it was the first game after the war. So it'll be similar to that.
I think,
did you not? There will be that enthusiasm. Yeah,
I would agree with you there. I mean, we're all champing at the bit to get back to it. No matter how miserable and cynical we all get as we get older, I can't even describe how much I miss the whole thing. And I think, you know, when we get back, it's going to be massive, really is.
I felt massive pangs of guilt, Chidge, because I went to the first game at Plough Lane. I covered the first game at Plough Lane. And, you know, I felt enormous. And every time I go there, I feel a lot of guilt. The fans have paid for it. They're not just like, you know, support the club. They've paid for the ground. Like, they did a bond. They raised £11 million. They've paid for that ground. I get to sit there first. And I went there. And, you know, I went there the other day to speak to their manager. You know, I'm blasting Thin Lizzy out the speakers in the car when I'm booting it around. You know, the boys are back in town. That's their song. And the whole place is dead. And you're just like, shit, this is so sad. Yeah. They've waited so long for that. Yeah. They've waited 30 years to play in Merton. And there's no fans.
No.
And, again... Like JK, what you said, like that game after the war, I really, really, really cannot wait for that Saturday, that first Saturday next season. And I think it will be the first Saturday next season. I think we'll see crowds in the playoffs. That's what I understand.
Yeah.
But next season, first Saturday, I want to find out where I'm going.
It ain't
going
to be, it's not going to be the same until we're all back. You know, we need 42,000 or 75,000 for you lot. Not you know, 2 or 3 or 10,000.
And away fans as well.
And away fans as well, Martin. Absolutely right.
I think
right.
we will. I think in August, September, we will, Chidge.
Well, let's hope so.
I've really got faith. I just hope I'm not sent somewhere shit. No, in my life, I'd be like, are you going Shrewsbury Saturday? Oh,
Bournemouth, God. Mate. You'll get sent to Bournemouth.
Mate, bland Reading, somewhere bland.
Aaron, we got to let you go, mate. But it's been so lovely to catch up with you again. We've missed your little face for the last couple of years. It's been lovely to catch up and see you.
Well,
I wish you all the best for the rest of the season. Not perhaps in a United capacity, but I love seeing... I mean, obviously, as you know, I follow you on Twitter and I'm always catching up with your little reports and things. And sometimes if I'm sitting here on a Saturday, you know, because of course I'm not the bloody football, so I might be catching up some work and I'm listening to the radio and your little voice comes in. It's like, I know that guy. It's fantastic. So keep doing what
I'd
you do,
I'd be the
mate.
Same to JK when I'm watching Channel 5, trust
me. No, it's ITV. ITV4, you see him chasing geezers around a swimming pool.
I'd text him. There's a point I'd text him and I'd just be like, oh, you know, is it true like Mary Queen of Scots was X, Y, Z? And he'd be like, yep.
I've just done airport security again, the documentary where everybody tries to smuggle cocaine. And that I've just done, I've been doing that from a little room here.
Yeah, he's developed a sniff as a result.
Yeah, from attempting to smuggle 450 grams of cocaine.
Keep you just it. use the right word on that, clandestines. I love it.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of that word used, yeah.
Enough, people, enough. Aaron, have fun tonight on Radio 5. Much, where can people check it out if they want to listen to it?
So it's tonight, 9 p.m, BBC Radio 5 Live, 72+. It's a new Football League pod. Look, it's very quickly, it's not just about, it's not a review, preview kind of thing. We're looking into football clubs, what actually goes on, the shit behind the scenes. We have a real, real good panel with us. Lyle Taylor, Joby McAnuff, Darren McAntony, Peterborough United owner, is always with us as well. Ryan Lowe, the manager, Glenn Murray, loads of people. This week, Danny Cowley, Mark Robinson, the new Wimbledon manager, Glenn Murray, loads of people on. And you can catch it on BBC Sounds as well. 72+, BBC Sounds. Trust me, it's a good listen. If you don't like it, then...
tough.
Write me a letter. Well, give me a call. If I don't pick up, don't call back.
Brilliant. Aaron, take care, mate. Lovely to see you. We'll hopefully speak to you again sometime soon, but you take care. Great to see you, mate. See ya.
Chidge.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live, it's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great! I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Jidge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18+, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Real fans, real opinions.
I'm Jason Cundy, and you're listening to the Chelsea Football Fancast. Up the Chelsea!
Footballfancast.com.
Right, welcome back. This is the Chelsea Fancast, the preview show of a Friday evening, horribly over budget as we often tend to be. But I have to say, JK, with good reason tonight, because Aaron, how lovely to catch up with Aaron again. What a lovely bloke.
Oh, God, yes. Well, it was really interesting, actually, for not having pushing the show along and allowing us to speak and him having an opportunity just to...
get his own back.
About, yeah, to an extent. Yeah, talking about United. And wonderfully informed and brilliantly fluent. Brilliant. Yeah, he's a really interesting
He's
guy.
Done really, really well for himself, actually, since Love Sport. Actually. He's better off out of that madhouse, and he's now doing proper work, which is really good to see. Anyway, right, it's our turn now. I've got obviously I'm Stanford Chidge, as you all know, Jonathan Kidd, you just heard from there, and of course the wonderful Martin Wickham.
I'm still here.
He's still here too. And it's now our turn to talk about the Chelsea United game on Sunday. And we've already kind of alluded to a lot of the points I wanted to talk about, really, about this game, because it's all pretty obvious. I mean, there's only so many ways you can swing a particular cat. But I think I'll start with this one, really. You know, given United's proclivity to attacking, Martin, and the fact that we haven't really faced, I don't think, yet, apart from, oddly, Barnsley, I suppose, who Tuchel himself admitted was the most difficult match he's faced so far, they are likely to attack us. So I do wonder whether he will start with Jorginho, which kind of picks up on what we were talking about earlier, and whether he might start Conte and Kovacic.
Yeah, well, as we've, well, I've certainly said a few times, Jorginho is a horses for courses player. Now, he looked good on Tuesday because Atletico sat back and he wasn't pressured. We know United will attack. We know they will pressure, and we know they'll look to hit us on the counter. So if he does get put under pressure, he could be susceptible to giving the ball away, being forced into a mistake. So I think it's something that he will consider, whether he decides to bring Kante in with Kovacic. I don't know, because it can't really argue against the fact that he has played and we've had some very impressive results, and it was capped off on Tuesday with what happened there.
I know, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's not black and white. It's full of nuance, JK, as we were kind of saying earlier on, wasn't it?
I don't think I don't think he's going to play he's not going to play a four at the back. It seems obvious to me now that he's now settled for the
It's working. It's working.
We've got a team that won a league title after a switch to three at the back. Yeah. We have got key members of that squad still there. We've got Dave still there. We've got Alonso. Christian settled in well the season after and looked like a fish out of water when it got switched back to a four. And I owe the man a massive apology for some of the stick I've given him on here, as you might have seen on the WhatsApp group night. But
It's not performed well in a four, has he?
He's no, he hasn't. But it's not rather than dogmatically sticking to it. It's immediately switched to a three. And as a result of how he's played, we haven't had to rush Thiago Silva back. Which is,
I wonder that if Silva will actually get back if Christensen plays as well as that, because he's a slightly more sprightly alternative. I mean, having said that though, Silva is a really class player.
Rolls Royce, mate.
Absolutely, yeah. And once he's fit, he will play, because there will be an absolutely stupid schedule to the end of the season. But he doesn't need to be rushed back. He didn't need to be rushed back on Tuesday. He doesn't need to be rushed back on Sunday.
But he's definitely not in for Sunday.
No, and if he's fit, if he's ready for, say, Thursday or the game against Everton a week later, great. Yeah. But no, we don't have to play him every single game if Christensen is looking as composed as he has.
Don't you feel that after the game on the during the week, on the Tuesday, that one's perception of actually what Tuchel is doing has changed, because Southampton was so awful? But we now see that he's constantly thinking about ways of using this three at the back, and the fact that they completely prevented Atletico from getting the ball forward and pushed them out, he will have come up with a plan to deal with United, specifically because of the experience that he had last year beating them in the Champions League. So I'm just intrigued as to see how he could then make that work.
Well, it's a good question. It's a really good question, because I think, of course, he will. But if the players don't do what he tells them to, it all goes to tits up.
As we found against Saints.
Yeah. Well, also, if the opposition manager comes up with a plan that he hasn't thought of, like Hasenhüttl did with Alonso, it all goes to shit. So, I mean, that's the thing with football. You know, you've got to deal with what's happening in front of you in real time. But I think, you know, just to pick up on one of the things that you're alluding to, JK, one of the things he's got to do, in my book, is to come up with a way to deal with United's counter-attacking. I mean, so far, we've dealt with that really, really well. And I think that's very much fundamental to having three at the back. But of course, you know, that means the wing-backs have got to do their fair share of defending as well. The other thing is they've gotten, and this is interesting actually, because Fernandes is a very clever player, nay cheat. And he has this ability to go down either in the box or just outside it and win a lot of free kicks from which they score. How many times have we seen Chelsea defenders or midfielders give away free kicks 5 yards outside of the box?
It's a given, Jude.
They have got to be so much more streetwise than they are. Yeah. I mean, I know Jorginho has an allergy to playing second legs in Europe and he gets suspended for a lot of them, but, you know, Mount just fell into the trap straight away. You have to play differently in Europe for certain, and against Fernandez, don't foul him in our own half. Just well, do whatever you can, shepherd him out, whatever you need to do, pinch his thigh, I don't know, do something. Well, but
we've got Stuart Atwell as the referee on Sunday, which I, you know, no referees are good in my book, but it's certainly better than having Mike Dean or Anthony Taylor, who I think would get conned stupid by Fernandez.
Or Atkinson, who just is too far off the face of the game.
I can't get my head around Atkinson because he looks
Was old 10 years ago when Ferguson slagged him off, and he's still going. I don't understand that.
Well, he also looks like Dr. Mart, which really unnerves me. So I keep thinking Dr. Mart's kind of donned the black gab. But I mean, that's.
Can I just ask a question for a second here? Do United not play similarly to Atletico to the extent that they're very swift out of the defensive mode? So in a sense, Jorginho might be the player for that.
Maybe.
If because it seems to just it's the speed out. But if you're preventing them from coming out, as we did with Atletico, then perhaps you're controlling the game better. This is why I'm intrigued to see what they'll come up with, because clearly Tuchel gave another wonderful press conference today. I'm just slightly falling in love with him. He's just such a bright guy. And I was so impressed with the way he dealt with Atletico during the week that I have high hopes for Sunday, in fact.
Maybe. I mean, as we said, you know, the beauty of having, you know, Jorginho and Kovacic, and I think perhaps those two particularly, is that we do keep hold of the ball. But I still think that Chelsea's huge problem at the moment is a problem that's been going on for some time now, which is either we can defend really well and be absolutely toothless up front, or be great up front and rubbish at the back. We just don't seem to be able to put a team together that can do both. And I think that everything that, you know, quite rightly, as I said earlier on, you know, quite rightly what Tuchel's done, he's looked at it and said, this is a side that can't defend. We're not going anywhere unless we learn how to. So I'll shore up the back first. Let's go to a back three. I look like they've got the players that can play a back three. We'll do that. And the rest will follow. And I think this is what leads me to think that we could be in for a draw here on Sunday. Because I still think that unless it all mysteriously clicks, because this is what I can't understand. Well, I think I can. But, you know, you've got, what, Werner, Abraham, Giroud, Pulisic, Havertz, Ziyech, Hudson-Odoi, Mason Mount. You've got players here who you would say these guys know what they're doing. They're great. They're great up front. They're creative. They can score goals, and that's true. But they clearly aren't. Maybe the problem is that we don't have that service, that link from midfield to attack. And when you've got, whether it be Kante, Kovacic, or Jorginho in the midfield, you know, the only kind of creative force is coming from the width in the wing backs. It's not coming through the middle. We're not linking up the midfield with those great attacking players that we've got.
But isn't that also to do with the fact that we can't shoot? I mean, we keep going back about.
Well, I agree. There's all sorts of other reasons too. Like, they're all in horrendous form. They can't hit a cow's arse with a banjo, etc., etc., etc. But I do think there's a systemic problem too, and I think that we just don't have enough creative midfielders. I mean, if you go back. I mean, we say it like a bloody broken record on this show, but if you go back far enough, you know, Mikel and Makalele were the only two kind of what we would call bona fide defensive midfielders that we had playing regularly. But everybody else that played in the midfield was capable of connecting the play and scoring. Essien, Balak, Lampard, to name but three. You know, and I think that's the problem. And I mean, it really grinds my gears, all this talk about, oh, we got to buy another world-class striker. Oh, we got to buy another world-class centre-back. Why aren't we looking at the midfield? I think the midfield is the bigger problem area. Or am I just nuts, Martin?
I just
don't answer think, that.
Oh, it's a rhetorical question, was it? Bastard. I'll do my best. I just think he started with the defence, getting that sorted, because it was an absolute joke at times how exposed they were. And to do that, he's imposed discipline in the midfield, defensive discipline. As a result, creativity has taken a back seat. I mean, yeah, we could buy, like I say, I think we curse strikers. We've been doing it for years. It's not a new thing. I don't know who would come in into that midfield and make an immediate impact. But That's what we're going to find out in the summer, I guess.
I don't think we have the players. I mean, one solution that's been positive, which I don't think is a bad one, actually. It'd be interesting to hear what JK thinks of this. But, you know, we said it on the show donkeys ago. You know, even if he's playing this 3-4-2-1, maybe think about playing Mount as one of the midfield two with Kante. Or it doesn't really matter. Kante, you know, if you look at, if you've got Kante, Jorginho or Kovacic as one of them, any one of those three, stick Mount in next to them, and then you've got more forward momentum and creativity from the deep lying midfielders. You know, you can stick, I mean, one of the things that people are always criticising Chelsea for at the moment, which I think is absolutely valid, we've got too many bloody number 10s. So, you know, recognise that. Mount can play anywhere. He's that good. It's like Kante, can play anywhere, really. So maybe that's how you deal with it. Move Mount back and have, say, Havertz as your number 10 with Werner or whoever.
He wouldn't be as good as Mount, though, playing at that position.
Well, I totally get it. But you know what? You know this very well because you're old enough to remember.
Am I?
You are. I'm not. I was only 1 year old when this happened. But, you know, you looked at the England 1966 World Cup winning team. You know, you didn't necessarily have the best 11 players in the world playing for England. What you had was the best team. And what Ramsey did was he moulded a team that fitted together and worked really, really well. And that's the art of football. It's not about having the best 11 individuals on that pitch. And if you've got somebody like Mount who is good enough to be able to play anywhere, yeah, he might be brilliant as the number 10, but you've got other players. Pulisic can play number 10. Havertz can. Ziyech can play in that role. So maybe you make the best team by having Mount come back a bit and be that link that we so desperately need, I think, between midfield and attack.
Just mentioning Ziyech and Havertz, when they came on, I thought they were liberated. They looked absolutely at ease in a way they hadn't done.
Well, yeah, slower football, not enough, you know, it's not aggressive, people aren't pressing them. You know, I mean, they're European players and they get more time on the ball and they don't have some hairy-ass agricultural player up their arse, do they?
No.
You know?
Of which there are many.
There are many, which is why British football is the greatest football in the world, because even the shit players have a chance. God love us, mate. There you go. I don't know. It's all very crazy. Now, listen, we were talking about up front. You know, I think if we were being utterly objective, we would say that even against Atletico, we were creating chances and not putting them away. So we're still being very, very wasteful up front, which begs a humongous question on the basis that if we're going 3-4-2-1, then we would imagine that Werner will be one of the two up front of that three. And no doubt Mount as his partner. So who gets the striker, the lone striker role? Is it Giroud or Tammy, JK?
I would play Giroud after his experience during the week, just because of his ability to snatch the moment, which I'm not convinced at the moment Tammy is up for. I don't know, once again, will he surprise us? Will he come up with a combination? He might play Pulisic and then have not have a central, may have a false nine. You never know what he works out. In which case, Odoi would play. If Odoi's right wing back, yeah, Pulisic would have to be the false nine in the middle, wouldn't he? At least Pulisic's fit, and if he's playing. If he's been playing well enough in training, he should get a nod. At least he'll get a go. He'll come on. I'm not convinced Ziyech will. But no, I think he'll try and play the side. I'd have thought he'll play the same side, actually, that he played during the week. Yeah. I'd have thought. Because Giroud on those moments becomes talismanic. You just think he can't drop him. But he said in the press conference today, he said, yes, he's ready to play all the time. It's a question of whether I select him, in essence. So he's not going to give the game away. But... his ability to score great goals. And the dilemma is occasionally he plays like, you know, the Iron Man in the Tin Man in The Wizard of Oz. And you just think, well, you know, it's all a bit too stiff. And he's not, he's described as bovine by Barney Rone in The Guardian this week.
Like a cow. Kind of,
you know, yeah, bullish aspect, yeah.
But at the Vashki Ree. You know,
but we are, yes, very much similar, yes, with an earring. But it was the fact that he can score these goals. We don't have a player in the side at the moment who can score goals like that. But it's a toss-up, isn't it? If Tammy doesn't look as if he's... He took him off against Southampton because he was just absolutely away with the fairies. But if he wasn't contributing anything and took him off at half-time, everybody was saying it was his injury. He wasn't injured. It was completely that he wasn't involved in the game. So when Tammy's involved, and if Rhys James plays and comes on, or even with Hudson-Odoi, he gets into the he's much so much quicker than Giroud. He puts himself about a lot more. But at the moment, to me, that's not enough. It's about scoring these goals from the edge of the area that nobody else is contributing, or that kind of magic moment which Giroud can conjure up. But really, to the essence of it is that neither of them is actually good enough for me to the kind of player that needs to be there, like a younger Aguero or something, who would just from every angle hit the target. That's what we're after. And that's what we need to aspire to get the club playing elite football again. I mean, having said that, we might have a run in the Champions League this season because of his tactical excellence. We will find out.
We will indeed. I mean, I'm pleasantly surprised by that because, let's face it, when that draw came out, none of us thought we'd be going... Hey, we've still got to win the second leg, guys.
Yeah. Yeah, still a long way ago in that game. Yeah, they've got to just keep it tight first 15 minutes. Go from there. Yeah. They can...
And no Mount.
Do them and nick them on the air.
And no Mount.
No Jorginho. So
well, I know. Martin, what do you think is going to happen up front? I mean, I think JK's nailed most of that, but it's an interesting choice that he's got for Sunday, isn't it?
I think against a lummox like Harry Maguire, I think Giroud can make him look very silly very quickly because he's deceptively strong. I think it's the ultimate, you know, Cavalier versus a Roundhead. I think, was it the... Cup semi-final, did he score at last cup semi-final?
I can't remember. All I can remember is Mount scoring that great goal.
I remember Mount scoring, but I'm pretty sure either he put himself about and Maguire made a dick of himself or scored an own goal. I can't remember which, but I think initially it will be a physical battle. And maybe later on in the game, you can put Tammy in to play off the shoulder. I don't know, but yeah, I would start Giroud. I think he's... I don't know if he's... call him a great goal scorer or a scorer of great goals. That's the thing.
The latter, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think so as well.
It's a real tough one, isn't it? I mean, you know, because I think the trouble is if Werner was banging them in, we wouldn't even be having this discussion. But until he starts doing that, it's all moot, isn't it? Oh, well, who knows? I mean, the one thing I meant to ask Aaron, actually, but Aaron just delighted us talking about everything he talked about. But I was going to ask him how on earth Harry Maguire gets away with it with such, you know, impunity every flaming match. I mean, obviously he you know, we should have had a penalty for his foul on Aspilicueta. He managed to elbow. I mean, I would always approve of anybody elbowing Lascelles in the face. But that aside, that should have been a penalty for Newcastle last week. Martin, I don't like him, I have to say. As a footballer, I don't think he's very good. And I think he's a snide arse as well, as are most of the United players, but Maguire particularly.
Not forgetting the fact that he nearly castrated Michy Batshuayi and got away with it even after a VAR check.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
You know, he's just overrated player with an England tax on him. I think he's a bit of a... I mean, I don't want to go down the, you know, the whole football Twitter thing, but you do see Man United fans just, you know, posting pictures of rusty refrigerators when they want to describe him, which is quite amusing. I'm not a fan. I think he's a snide, he's overrated, bit of a lummox.
He's been peculiarly protected by the ref, isn't he? That foul he did the other day when he just barged.
He's not that kind of player, JK.
Is that well? You wonder
what the most stupid expression in football.
Yeah. Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah, which was first coined after Ryan Shawcross broke a geezer's leg. It's a load of bollocks.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hey-ho. Well, look, let's hope if he does do anything nefarious, which, of course, he's bound to do, it actually gets picked up for a change and we benefit. So, JK, how do you see it going, my old China?
We're going to win, Chip.
We're going to win. 5-1, JK, this week?
3-1.
3-1.
I'm not going mad this time, but 3-1.
No, 3-1, mate. It's a tad optimistic, much as I love you. Martin, what do you say?
I think we will both end up cancelling each other out, but I can't bring myself to say we're not going to win, so I'm going to say 2-1 Chelsea.
Okay, well, I just think that, you know, United have not lost... I mean, here we go. 19 Premier League games unbeaten. Began at the Bridge with a 2-0 win in February 2020. But they've not lost away all season, which is frightening. You know, we're aiming to keep our fourth consecutive home clean sheet in the top flight for the first time in 3 years. I just think this has got draw written all over it. I mean, plus the fact that we couldn't hit a cow's arse with a banjo, as we keep saying. So I'm thinking, you know, and Cavani's out for them as well, which I don't think that will help them particularly. And I think there's a doubt about James as well. But I think this has got draw written all over it. I'm going 1-1. Much as it pains me to say it, because I'd love to smash the Manx as I always do. But
I'm surprised they played. They played as strong a team as they did on Thursday. I don't know why the hell Bruno Fernandes was even on the bench, let alone starting. So, you know, with any luck, we can eke it out late. But I think it is going to be an attritional game either way, because I think we've had a bit of a mental block playing Manchester United for years. This predates, this goes back to when Conte was in charge.
Well, Martin, last time we beat United in the league was in 2017.
Yes. 4-0, wasn't it?
No, 1-0.
No.
The 4-0, we beat them in
the league.
That
was the season before, yeah.
Well, we keep beating them in the cup with the disgraceful regularity, which is wonderful. But the 4-0 was, I think that was would have been Conte as well, wouldn't it? That was his first time against United, and he humiliated Mourinho in more ways than one. Don't you remember?
Yeah, but I do. But then I also remember we went to Old Trafford, played rather timidly, and lost 2-0 on the verge of the title. And I think there's been times where, you know, Moyes was in charge of Man U, and we gave them far too much respect.
Yeah,
I think there's been a bitter, and I maintain as well that 4-0 loss on Lampard's first game in charge, I think he was still thinking of that back in October with that 0-0.
Undoubtedly, and
who, oh, absolutely, yeah.
And who could blame him? Although maybe he should have been thinking about the 3-1 that we dished out to them in the cup semi-final, where we absolutely played them off the park. But the reality is that they've had the Indian sign on us for a while. And, I mean, that's interesting, actually, because our record against Man United in the Premier League, I think it's still the best record of anybody against Man United in the Premier League. We've always tended to do well against them. Nevertheless, Martin's going 2-1, JK's going for 3-1. I'm being Mr. Cautious. I'm going 1-1. So there you go. You heard it here
first.
Is that
in your predictions?
Well, it's funny you should say that, JK. I haven't as yet made my predictions, but I can give you all an update on the Prem Predictions League, because we've been a bit remiss in this recently. And last week was quite interesting. I was shocking, and then it all started to come rather good. But I'm still languishing in 19th place. I am, however, above some fellow fancasters, it being Mark Meehan, who's in 22nd, and Tony Glover, who's in 25th, and somebody called Jonathan Kidd, who is 30th. But you are picking up, actually. A, you're no longer bottom, although Chev and Harry joined about 3 weeks ago. So obviously you have a bit of an advantage. But you got 72 points, including 28 bonus points for predicting that Man City would score the quickest goal.
I've done it again. I think they'll do the same again.
All right. Well, that's an interesting point, actually, because if we do beat United, West Ham have got City, so, you know, that will be good for us because we'll go above them and we need to. But anyway, you're in 30th, but you are doing better than you were, that's for sure. Above me in the Chelsea Fancasters Select Mini League, Dane Whittle is just above me. Dane is remarkable. He's up and down like a yo-yo, but he's in 18th, I'm in 19th. Martin had a shocker. Martin was in the top 10 not that long ago. He's now down to 14th. And the leader of the Chelsea Fancast pack is Marco, who's in 13th. So Martin, explain yourself, because you've been our most consistent and best player up till now.
I did warn you I was due some shit weeks. I've had about 3 in a row now, so I'm looking to turn it around this week. But no doubt I've probably bollocked it up somewhere and back Everton to do well, and they've let me down like they usually do, the fuckers.
Yeah, well, you got 39 points last week, and I got 107, and JK got 72, so that is shocking. You're dead right.
That's not good.
Anyway, the people are doing really, really, really well. I mean, Joe Mingola, bless his little heart, he's still way out in front. Remarkable, absolutely remarkable bloke. You know, he's way out ahead. Josh Wadsworth is in second. Yarick Koska is in third. These guys have consistently been there or thereabouts. Freddie Karberg got more. I mean, he got, I think, 372 points a couple of weeks ago, which I think was the most points that anybody's got in a week in the entire thing, not just our league. So I think Freddie will be earning himself some money for that performance. But the best performer of the week, and someone, again, who has been just utterly brilliant and consistent, is the lovely Claire McConnell. She got 223 points last week, and she's in fourth. But, I mean, those. I mean, our top ten are phenomenal. I'll just read you a few more. Chris Thomas is in fifth, Ash Pinto sixth, Freddie Karberg seventh, John Jay Hines is in eighth, Steve Burton is ninth, and Supreet Manava is 10th. But I don't know how you lot do it. You put us all to shame. But there you go. What can I say, boys? We must do better.
I'll try and spend a bit more time looking at previous results and whether players are injured and that kind of thing, which I think is essential. I think you need a bit of research into this. I tend to go on gut instinct, or even I go on 1966 results, right about that era. I go, what happened then? How did they go? Leeds,
I mean, you know, Joe is in the Discord group, as you know, and I often talk to him about it, and he will confirm that there is no rhyme or reason to this whatsoever. You know, I think what he's done is he's playing a percentage game now because he's got a healthy lead. But the reality is, I mean, you know, for example, Leeds are unbackable. You cannot predict.
You know,
I think it's really difficult this year because football is really difficult to predict this year. We've never had a season like this. And
the one thing I will say is I completely missed how badly Southampton's form tailed off.
Yeah.
We've only just picked up on it now, which means they'll probably start fucking winning again.
Hey ho, it's great fun, I have to say. Our Prem Predictions League has been...
I'm going to put more time into it as well. I'm going to take 10 minutes to do the predictions rather than five.
I still do my fastest scoring team by literally I blow it up on the computer screen so all you can see are the fixtures, and then I whiz my mouse around, shut my eyes, whiz the mouse around, and then stop it, and wherever it is nearest to, that's who I shit you not, because I'll
Sheffield
tell you
United
what,
I'll yeah, bollocks I'm doing
no,
that
no,
again.
Because I tell you, it's more bloody effective than actually trying to work it out sensibly. So there you go. It's like the equivalent of pinning a tail on a donkey, mate, with your blindfold on. So there you go. What do I know? I've one other bit of news before we disappear and leave you to your weekend is that I have some great news coming for you, I think, next week. But I've done a deal in a Harry Redknapp style with a football memorabilia company where basically you buy tickets. Effectively what they do is that they have, you know, like signed shirts, framed signed shirts, all this kind of thing. And you pay about a fiver for a ticket and you go into a draw. And they do a live draw on a Wednesday and you have a chance of winning. And it'll all be Chelsea memorabilia. You know, they do it for lots of other clubs. But it'll, for us, I mean, like an Eden Hazard signed shirt, for example. So there you go. So there'll hopefully be news of that on Monday.
Well, that sounds interesting. Yeah.
Well, that's what I said to this lovely bloke called Bill. That is, in fact, his name. You know, who's a Leeds supporter who set up this company. And I was saying, well, I think, you know, all kind of like real supporters that I know, we all love memorabilia. I mean, everybody that I know who really loves it, they've got signed shit. You know, everybody I know has got signed shit. We just do. It's what we're about, isn't it? I mean, I've got them all up on the wall, as you know now. It's taken me years to do it, but I've finally done it. So, yeah, I think this might be quite a giggle. So you basically pay a fiver, get into the draw, and you've got a chance of winning a signed shirt. Lovely.
Sounds good to me. I'll be up for that.
You like that? Like that, Martin?
Decent. I need to hang the one bit of signed memorabilia I've got. I still ain't hung it on a wall yet, so I need to get my arse in gear.
You do indeed. All right. We got lovely, love you and leave you. It's been great fun tonight. Again, over budget. What did I say on Monday? We must keep to an hour, JK. We must keep to an hour. I blame Aaron Paul, mate. I blame Aaron Paul.
For being brilliant.
Wasn't it lovely to catch up with him?
Fantastic. Yeah, great.
Yeah, really lovely. Really lovely. Okay, well, look, we've got to go. We will.
The one thing I would say, the look on his face when you said it's live was priceless. And and disturbingly, he does a better Irish accent than me. My parents are Irish.
He's a really good lad. It was lovely to see Aaron. Lovely to see Sam, of course, from football.london. And, of course, lovely for all of you lot who've been listening in tonight as well. Now, JK and myself will be back on Monday evening, of course, for the usual Chelsea fancast. To look back at the match against United and, of course, ahead to the massive match against Liverpool on Thursday. They just come so thick and fast. There will be two other people with us, but I've not actually done the schedule yet. But I will try and do it tomorrow morning.
Wherever they are, they'll be excellent.
Of course they will. They're Chelsea fancast. They're all quality. Anyway, that's it from me and JK.
Lovely to be on the show.
You lovely. Too. Lovely to see you. Martin, as always, good to see you.
Yep, likewise. Lovely to see you all. Really enjoyed it.
Well
done, great stuff. Thank you to everybody in Mixlr. Thank you for listening. See you next week. Until then, keep it blue, keep it carefree, keep it chills. Up the chills!
Up the chills! Can you do, boys?
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.